there was a poem mentioned earlier today, and Anna mentioned the notion of the Beats and their sort of spiritual philosophy. And I said to Habib, you know, when you go to meet McClure, if you could translate this into Arabic, I think he'd be really happy. And then I thought, you should translate it into French too. And it's called Action Philosophy, and I think it speaks very well for the Beats in general, but it was written by McClure in the mid-70s. And it starts out with a quote from Thoreau, that government is best which governs least. Let me be free of ligaments and tendencies to change myself into a shape that's less than spirit. Let me be a wolf, a caterpillar, a salmon, or an otter sailing on the silver water beneath the rosy sky. Were I a moth or condor, you'd see me fly. I love this meat of which I'm made. I dive in it to find the simplest vital shape. Ah, here's the child. What's liberty when one class starves another? So that's a Michael McClure poem. I just want to make one mention on all the pictures that we saw. The notion of nothing existing past the 49th parallel, you know, is quite a metaphor for how we understand our neighbors to the north and our neighbors in this bioregion called Cascadia, which is part of what led me to create the Cascadia Poetry Festival, the second edition of which will be happening next May at Seattle U, May 2, 3, and 4. And our headliner will be the first Parliamentary Poet Laureate of Canada, George Bowring, who is so unknown in this country that it wasn't until about 5 or 6 years ago that he had his first reading in Seattle. And earlier this year at a Sherman Alexie reading, the name was mentioned, and would he take him on in a poetry bout? And he said, George who? Sherman Alexie didn't even know who he was. This is the first Parliamentary Poet Laureate of Canada. So he, along with Canadian George Stanley and Joanne Kiger, will be among the invited poets to the Cascadia Poetry Festival. So I started getting interested in poetry in the 90s. When my first daughter was born, I wanted to give her some of the things that I didn't have and a background in literature. My dad was a railroad guy, so, you know, he wasn't much into poetry. I was doing a radio show at the time. And in 1993, I started a nonprofit corporation to syndicate these interview programs. And in 1994, I had the opportunity to interview Allen Ginsberg. And I didn't know much about his work, but I read thoroughly the book Cosmopolitan Greetings, which he was touring with to help celebrate the 20th anniversary of the founding of the Jack Kerouac School of Disembodied Poetics, which was founded in 74 with Ann Waldman. I think Diane DePrimo was also there in the beginning. So among the many things that Alan talked about is the concept of first thought, best thought, so the notion of a spontaneous poetics. And so this is what he said about this, and I'll try and get a little louder if it's not loud enough.
First thought, best thought is the title of a book by Chogyam Trungpa, my Tibetan Lama guru. And it came up in the course of a conversation which we were composing a chain poem together, each of us contributing one line piece. And at some point I said, the monk bent down to lace his animal shoes. And I didn't know what I meant by animal shoes, it just came up out of my head. And he said, animal shoes? And I said, oh yes, the shoes are made of leather, animal shoes. He said, and the first thought is the best thought. Meaning, the first raw flash on your mind that's usually visual, before you mediate it and edit it and editorialize on it and generalize on it or make it okay for other people to look at or filter it.
Yeah.
Before you filter it, it usually comes intact as a kind of raw, emotionally interesting gleam, usually visual. So Kerouac has the idea in his instructions for writing, don't stop to think of words but to see picture better, i.e. the first primordial picture that you see. Because what people tend to do is be a little ashamed of their minds or ashamed of their raw thoughts or think, oh, that's too personal or that's just me. Maybe I should generalize it, say I'm having a dream in which I'm sleeping with my mother. No, I don't want to write about that. So I'll say, I had a dream in which I did something bad. Or I had a dream in which I outraged society. Or I had a dream in which I don't know. It's been so funny, you lose the humor and the contradictoriness and quiddity and humanity of the first glimpse back to Oedipus and goes back to Freud or goes back before the Bible. And you lose the detail and you lose the believability, and instead you get some generalization or abstraction. And one very interesting thing that William Blake says is, generalization and abstraction are the plea of the hypocrite, knave, and scoundrel.
Whoops. So the notion that you'd hide something, you know, Blake and others in that lineage consider that to be, you know, a sign that you're trying to hide something. He paraphrased Blake, and there's the full quote in this book, which I guess I could find later, but he sort of paraphrased what Blake was saying. Allen collected these mind-writing slogans over his life, and they're in the back of this anthology, Disembodied Poetics. And when we were going through used bookstores, the one in the market, I said, Habib, you want that one. So that's one of the ones you want to bring home. So I have two tracks from my first interview with Ann Waldman. She was with Andrew Schelling at the time. And one of them is about the mind-writing slogans, and one of them is about American sentences. And this doesn't come up as labeled in QuickTime, so I'm just going to play it and hope this is the right one. But this is from I think it was 2001 interview where I talked to them.
Well, Allen was developing this list over his years of teaching, and a lot of his first teaching, you know, in the more traditional, not the word traditional, but in a, you know, in a setting, was at Naropa. So he gathered a lot of these up himself. He used them actively as in his own practice, and recommended them highly. They're not just his own sayings. Many things from Pound, from his Buddhist teacher Chögyam Trungpa, from Keats, from William Blake. So very much came out of his, you know, his reading and his studies, and poets that he was very attentive to. And, you know, one of the, of course, major quote from Blake around the minute particulars look to the little ones. And that was key. Things are symbols of themselves. Constant, sense of generosity, his own lines about, as you were quoting earlier, poetry easing suffering, everything else drunken, dumb show.
And he worked them over the years. You can find that the title poem to his book, Cosmopolitan Greetings, is actually made up of many of his mind-writing slogans. So he was working on them and refining them over the decades, and they appear in a number of places.
Could you read a few of those? You have a nice little chapbook there. And William Carlos Williams, Jack Kerouac, some of the other folks that reference Charles Olson.
Nothing is better for being eternal, nor so white as the white that dies of a day. Louis Zukofsky.
And these are four from Allen. Notice what you notice. Catch yourself thinking. Observe what's vivid. Vividness is self-selecting.
And from William Carlos Williams, no ideas but in things. No ideas but in the facts. And again from Williams, close to the nose.
Jack Kerouac, don't think of words when you stop, but to see picture better. Details are the life of prose, also Jack Kerouac.
And from Allen, intense fragments of spoken idiom best, which is repeated a little bit up there by William Butler Yeats. And being old, she put a skin on everything she said.
Tailoring from Gregory Corso, the late, recently late Gregory Corso.
And from Allen, maximum information, minimum number of syllables.
One touch of nature makes the whole world kin.
And William Blake, God appears and God is light to those poor souls who dwell in night. But does a human form display to those who dwell in realms of day?
From Bob Dylan, the purpose of art is to stop time.
And from Ezra Pound, to be men, not...
Whoops, to be men, not destroyers. Sensitive mouse here. There it is. Thank you, Andrew. The whole Blake quote is, labor well the minute particulars, take care of the little ones. He who would do good for another must do it in minute particulars. General good is the plea of the scoundrel, hypocrite, and flatterer, for art and science cannot exist but in minutely organized particulars. So there's, with the Beats, there's there's this, you know, Jack Kerouac's Bop Spontaneous Prose, his approach, very much modeled on Charlie Parker and the beboppers of the mid-50s, who he was seeing in all those amazing New York clubs. That's one approach. In 1950, Charles Olson wrote an essay called Projective Verse, and that's another approach to spontaneous composition. And it's a little more developed and has become a more seminal and more influential essay. And Michael McClure, in a 1995 interview, so I interviewed Ginsberg in 94 and then McClure in 95, and you talk about life-changing experiences. What happened was I saw McClure's book come to my house. I was a reviewer, and I saw the book, and, oh, he's played with Ray Manzarek of the Doors. I got to interview this guy, you know. So I took the book on my annual backpacking trip to the Olympic National Park, and we got up to Appleton Pass, and then we all had the day to kind of, like, go different ways. And I went up further to about 5,500 feet, and I was looking at the Boulder Creek watershed, and I saw in the book, it said, and in McClure's iconic line spacing, his the composition by Field in capital letters, and each line spaced more alive than I ought to be. And I'm thinking, yes, I know what he's talking about, because I'm seeing this pristine watershed where we had seen bears on the way up. And Michael then the next month talked about projective verse.
So here's a few stanzas.
That's Dolphin Skull. This is projective verse. Dolphin Skull was written in projective verse, but this is the method.
These three poems are unchanged. They're spontaneously, and they are as they were written, and each one is a kind of a spiritual challenge. And part of the adventure of consciousness taking place there is that I may not change it. That is, I do not allow myself to change it. And that doesn't mean that it's a grueling or excoriating task that I've laid upon myself, but a very sweet possibility of taking a trip through experience that I've never taken before. Now, the poem does not really necessarily come from me. With projective verse, the inspiration for the poem can be outside of you, and then or it could be inside of you. It could be a perception, or a memory, or a piece of consciousness. But it could also be, let's say, it was a vase of incredibly beautiful irises. Then I look at that vase of irises, or touch it, and I smell it. It's not just looking at it. I'm aware. I have the perception in the real world of that vase of irises. It becomes part of me as a physical being, and then it sort of like rebounds following my breath line onto the page. That is arranged on the page in terms of my breath line. And what I'm really listening to as I write it is not metrical foot, like, you know, AB, light, heavy, light, heavy, light, heavy, or any given count, but I'm listening to the syllables as it happens. So you see, it's less like I'm dragging something up out of myself than it is like I'm acting in the world, like those painters I spoke of.
The painter that he was speaking of earlier in the interview was Jackson Pollock. Mm. So the action painting is what he was referring to. And then this last cut is Ann and Andrew talking about a form that Alan created based on haiku.
Well, based on haiku, which Alan loved the idea that it was 17 syllables, but he was also very interested, of course, in Buddhism for the second half of his life, and probably the central mantra or wisdom phrase of Buddhism comes from the Heart Sutra. It runs, gate, gate, para, gate, para, samgate, bodhi, swaha. And Alan discovered that has 17 syllables also, and so he felt that maybe 17 syllables had a more universal application.
It was not
just located in Japan or old India, and so this was a way of him playing with that possibility.
Americanizing.
And well, also, of course, the Japanese line, as we were pointing out in the workshop, is, you know, one line down, the characters running down the page. It's not broken up into these three neat lines as you see in translated haiku. So, you know, the sense of that one, and also the running together of the thoughts that has the energy of the way the mind works, that actually you are putting these things together, even though they seem tripartite, and in the traditional view of the haiku, heaven, earth, man. In the winter cabinet, the fly has died of old age. In the medicine cabinet, the winter fly has died of old age.
Kerouac's.
And if you think of Allen's maxim, maximum information, minimum number of syllables, well, 17 is a small number of syllables, so how to make a poem that really carries the weight of a poem. And I think that fascinated him and should become a form that's used regularly in workshops.
It's a great discipline.
So American Sentences, the name of that form, and Allen wrote a few. Some of them are in Cosmopolitan Greetings. And before that visit by Ann and Andrew, I thought, well, before they teach it in the workshop, I'm going to get a head start on the class. So I'm going to write one a day. And then I wasn't able to take the class because NPR said, no, we're having a fun drive. You can't stay away this Saturday. So I started writing at the beginning of that year, 2001, and I have written one a day since then. And so in anticipation of this chat, I picked out a few, one from each year of my practice. And some, and I at the time I figured they all had some kind of beat link to them. So I'll read these. With, they're not titled, they just have a date. February 6th, 01, in right wing senator's office, framed picture of the Enola Gay. That's Senator Pam Roach. February 8th, 2002, next to condom dispenser is written, this is the worst gum ever. November 22nd, 03, with serious faces, they all wait outside the hospital and smoke. March 12th, 04, after the terror bombings, cell phones ring next to corpses in Madrid. February 21st, 05, Walt Whitman, one with everything, I use his book to swat dead a fly. August 24th, 06, acupuncture, don't the needles hurt, said FedEx driver with pierced tongue. April 8th, 07, tell Richard I'm laying off women. He says, you gonna wear the patch? April 4th, 08, how bright the ember of the incense stick the moment when the ash falls off. January 6th, 09, this is about Michael McClure. Michael says he gets writer's block about 6 or 7 times a day. And then also McClure, July 16th, 2010. Michael, going through his address book, tells me this is like a graveyard. January 12th, 11. Just because he has a bald spot doesn't mean he can't have a mohawk. January 13th, 2012. An allusion to Kerouac here. Useless, useless, flossing in the midday, eating popcorn at night. And the last one, I cut myself shaving, and you know, she said, you're bleeding. And here's the rest of the poem. I said, at least I'm not bleeding from the genitals. She says, not yet. So that's one from my wife. And I think I have time to do, I'll just do these last two poems. I'm working one of the books. My first book was called A Time Before Slaughter, which is sort of like a Patterson-esque a poem, a book-length poem for Auburn, which was founded as the Town of Slaughter. It came out a little over three years ago. So it's a history in verse like Patterson or like the Maximus poems of Charles Olson. And I've moved on to cover another seminal event in the Northwest, the Pig War. So the book I'm working on is Pig War and Other Songs of Cascadia. So I'm getting into some of the bioregional aspects. But these last two poems I will read to introduce our next guest. And this comes from the August Poetry Postcard Fest, something we've done now. This is the 7th year. People get on a list in early July. At very late July, they send out 3 poems to people below them on the list. And then when you start getting them on August 1st, you're to write 1 a month till your whole list is done. And this year we created a list of 302 people. That's how many people signed up. So you just have to write 31 poems, not 302. And so I've been writing to the people on my list. And, you know, it's a postcard. So you want to write about, you know, like Jimmy Buffett said, the weather is here. I wish you were beautiful. That kind of thought. So these are a couple of poems. And Habib had been with me, so he shows up in the poems and his notion of Cascadia. And I think they both start out with epigraphs from Jose Lezama Lima, the late Cuban poet. And the first one goes, they want us to leap from that urn. They also want to see us naked. But put a Berber in Cascadia, Habib, they only see him leap ahead to focus the camera, leap after me for a parking strip garden strawberry, leap to see Tahoma at sunset from behind Madrones, to peel Madrones and learn latte speak and bring it back to Morocco, if you put a counterculture-loving Berber in Cascadia. And I got a Mount Rainier, it blushes, so that's kind of an allusion to the naked reference of Lezama Lima. That's the postcard that I sent it out on. And this other one has a postcard of British Columbia. I bought that in Vancouver. Maybe Tofino, I guess. I don't know. It has the flag on there. And the epigraph, Jose Lezama Lima. We go through ourselves, and the new surprise gives us our friends. We go through our friends and put a Berber on it in Cascadia. Berber shooting Portlandians fading on organic bikes. Berber at the intersection of pike and pike, planting an image behind flying fish or before a troll, aside a Lenin. Put a Berber on it, not a Bieber, and never get to Finland, just a 45th, and shadows of Aquila and Ethelbert and dear Denise, whose memorial stone, a throw from Bruce Lee's, points to desolation. So, without any further ado, I'd like to welcome our special guest, Habib from Morocco. Habib is studying the beats, and he is looking at, for his PhD dissertation, the beat connection to Morocco and the sort of countercultural artistic milieu at the time of their visit. So please welcome El Habib Louah.